morning again and run through this 17 periods, the first part of them, and look at the scripture content that goes with them as we think about memorizing this stuff and knowing where it is. So our first first five periods are the 17 periods. Keep in mind, there's nothing magic about the number 17. We talked about that. That's just what we break it into. 17 periods, get the narrative through the Bible. First five periods then, before the flood, scattered the people, the patriarchs, and then the Exodus. And we'll get to the next five in a minute on the screen. So, where are these, where's the text that talks about these? Well, before the flood is in the first, how many? Five chapters of Genesis. So we got five chapters, Genesis 1 through 5, talks about the period before the flood. And then the floods in the next how many? 6 through 10, which would be the next five chapters. So we got five chapters. And then the scattering of the people, Tower of Babel, that part, is in how many chapters? One. I'll catch up with us here. So one chapter there. So 1 through 5, 6 through 10, and then chapter 11. And then the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then the story of Joseph, covers what? The rest of the book of Genesis, 12 through 50. Okay? So we've got four periods covered in the book of Genesis. But you got that? Now, it says Sunday. It helps if you know your books of the Old Testament. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, like that, because they're going to go kind of in order here for a while. So Exodus is going to be the book of Exodus, obviously, where it would be. It covers Exodus, Leviticus, and the first 13 chapters of the book of Numbers. All takes all three of those to get the Exodus, getting out of Egypt down to the Red Sea up to Kadesh Barnea to send out the spies. Okay, so then the next five periods, following that, are wandering in the wilderness, basic conquest, the judges, and the four periods, United Kingdom. That's where we are. Our study now. So let's pick those up. We left off with Numbers 1 through 13, so we get the rest of the book of Numbers 14 through 36. Deuteronomy, and the first part of the book of Joshua covers the wandering in the wilderness up until they're ready to go in and conquer the land. And who was the person primarily assigned to lead them in to conquer the land? Well, that's Joshua. So most of the book of Joshua is covering the actual invasion and conquest of the land. So Joshua 4 through 24, a little bit of overlap, chapter 5, 4 and 5 overlaps a little bit. All right, Deuteronomy, Joshua, what's the next book? Judges, and obviously the period of the judges, but being judges, also judges, Ruth, and the very first part of 1 Samuel, up to chapter 8, where they ask for a king. Saul's anointed privately in chapter 9, so really the kingdom started in chapter 10. So judges kind of covers up judges, Ruth, and the first nine chapters of 1 Samuel. And then we're in the United Kingdom now. It picks up the rest of 1 Samuel, all of 2 Samuel, first part of 1 Kings. 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, first part of 1 Kings. Then we have a little twist to it here. Over in Chronicles, in 1 Chronicles 10 through 2 Chronicles chapter 9, there's a parallel story about the same time period. We've got a dual listing of scriptures there. So that kind of gets us up to where we are. And we'll add the rest of these in here. We'll get a little time later on. So looking at where we are here, we have Saul, David, and Solomon in this time frame. We just talked about 1 Samuel. Saul is pretty much 1 Samuel 10 through 31, the book of 1 Samuel. David is all the book of 2 Samuel. And then Solomon gets into 1 Kings, the first 11 chapters. Then we've got the parallel that goes with 1 Chronicles 10, 1 Chronicles 11 through 29, and then the first few chapters of 2 Chronicles 4, Solomon. So get these in your mind where this stuff is found. So don't go to turn about these periods we got there. We haven't got on the chart, but we also now can start putting some pretty reasonable times with it. Saul pretty much reigned from 1040 to 1000 BC. 40 years, Saul. 1040 to 1000. David, 1000 to 960, and then 960 to about 920. So the time frames here. So roughly 1000 years before Christ is talking about here. Okay? Okay, moving into our lesson tonight. Tonight we're in 1 Samuel, starting chapter 25. 1 Samuel 25. Now three chapters are covered tonight, so we'll go through these and then talk about some application at the end like we usually do die too. First part is Samuel dies. We'll cover that just very briefly. Then the story of David and Nabal and Abigail. And then David's, the next chapter is going to spare Saul's life for a second time. He's already done it once, but he cut his robe off in the cave. And then David's going to go back to Philistine territory, get away from Saul, like he's already done one time before also. That'll be chapter 27. So let's look at this now. So Samuel is, I think, quite a prominent figure in the history of Israel here. He was a prophet, he was a priest, he was a judge, and Samuel dies. I want you to notice how much space is given in the text here for Samuel's death. What you see? Look again. What's in the last part of that verse? About David. So less than one verse, and that's no big deal, I guess. This kind of caught my attention. Less than one verse is talked about Samuel's death. Samuel died. They buried him in his hometown, Ramah, which we looked at him about lots of times. And all Israel mourned about Samuel's passing. And that's all it said about Samuel's death. This great, great person we had here in their history, very much involved with him all these years. He died and buried him in his hometown. They mourned for him. That was it. So the last part of the verse picks up and talks about David. David leaves in Gedi, and we looked at that in quite a bit of detail Sunday with the video we looked at. And he moves down to the wilderness of Paran. So let's get a map up here and look at that a little bit. So here's in Gedi, on the edge of the Sea of Galilee, I mean, of the Dead Sea. We looked at that video and saw that Sunday, the barren land with the water there, this big spring in Gedi. But then David is down here in the wilderness of Paran, way down to the south, and this is really desolate, barren land down here. You're to call the Negev, dry, I mean, sure enough, barren. So where David's moving down, way to the south, southwest out here. While we're on this map, there's like two more cities. It's hard to see them on my screen there, maybe. Maon, we looked at before. That's been our story already. And the city of Carmel is here. They're going to be in play in this next section here with Nabal and Abigail, and his wife Abigail. So Maon and Carmel. One more map for the wilderness of Paran. Let's go back up one here. All right. When you talk about the land of Israel, you want to talk about the entire land. There's a saying that names two cities, from what to what? From Dan to Beersheba. The very top is Dan, which we all have out, way up the top up there. Down to Beersheba. Here's Beersheba. So we're going, David is down even below what's already talked about for the territory of Israel here. So keep in mind where Beersheba is. Let's go this map here. Well, here's Beersheba, way up here. So David's, where's Paran's way down here, where David's going. So way down south of where he's been. Okay, there's a man that lives in Maon, the city where he showed you the map, and it's Nabal. He has some business up in Carmel, which is not that far distance from there. He's up there, very wealthy man. He's got, let's say, 3,000 sheep, 1,000 goats or something like that, I think, if I remember right. But he's also a very harsh and really an evil man. We'll see if we go through the story here. So he was pretty much a rascal, I guess. His wife is Abigail. There's a couple of things said about her. One was she's very beautiful, very attractive. And she was also, I think one of the texts said, discerning. She got some wisdom to her. We're going to see that as we go through here tonight. Very beautiful and intelligent. So Nabal is up in Carmel with his sharing the sheep. Got 3,000 sheep, got to share the sheep. He got his people gathered up there. And it's generally a time of a feasting and festival. All the people, the shepherds meet together as they do the sharing their sheep and everything. So David sends a delegation of about, I think it's 10 men, if I remember right, up to visit Nabal. Well, what's David been doing? Why these men go see Nabal? What's David been doing for Nabal's people? Maybe in particular. And as, when David starts talking to the man, you're going to see, he said, they were a wall between Nabal's shepherds and any danger around them. They helped protect these shepherds all this time. So David sent in a delegation up there and said, look, we know it's time you're sharing your sheep, you got all the sheep together, you're killing the sheep, you're feasting, you're a festival. We need something to eat. Maybe he's got 600 men with him. We already talked about we'd be like trying to feed 600 men on a regular basis. So he wants to get some payback, if you will, for his kindness he showed them up there. Now, remember this too. This would fit right into David's life. David spent a lot of his life as a shepherd. So he would know what was going on at sheep shearing time. He'd know what it's like to protect his sheep, protect the flocks out there from danger. So, 3 points he's going to make here. While David was in the wilderness, obviously to feed 600 men would be a struggle. Okay? So he could have gone up there to Nabal's flock and probably taken anything he wanted. He was, after all, had a war already. So that's what David could have done. Apparently, without even being asked, what David did do was provide protection for the shepherds out there. So, what David could have done, and this is what he really did. He was nice to them, protected them, helped them out. Now we'll get this guy, Nabal. Instead of giving the kindness back and giving David's men something to eat for what they'd done for him, he was harsh and rude and said it absolutely no way. So what Nabal didn't do was provide for him, repay kindness with kindness. And what he did do was turn him away hungry. So, they go back to his men and told them to do what? Pick up your guns, guys. We're going to battle. Strap on your swords, okay? And he said, David put on his sword too. Now there, David, right or wrong, David is very vengeful here. The way Nabal treated him. So they put their swords on, they're ready to go. And one of the young men goes and tells Nabal's wife about it, Abigail. Well, as I said earlier, she's noted here as a wise, intelligent woman. So these messengers, when they go back and tell her, they make a statement about Nabal. What did these messengers, Nabal's people, say about him? He's a scoundrel, and he cannot be reasoned with. Anybody ever say about me, I wonder? Probably. The heads need to quit going like this. Now, okay, be nice about it. Think about that. There's a guy they say can't be reasoned with. The kind of guy he was. Let's hope they don't say that about us. So she grabs up 200 loaves of bread, some sheep that had already been prepared, and she gets this raisins, clutches of raisins. She goes to meet David. She's going to intercede where her husband had been ugly and harsh and nasty to David. She's going to get it and get this food for him. So she goes to David. When she meets him, she bows down on the ground before him, and she talks about her husband. How sorry he really is, kind of what she says, okay? And she talks about David. Okay. By the way, man, our wives, they intervene for us and show a little wisdom sometime, and we don't. Maybe. So she talks to David about not taking vengeance toward him. And David actually says in his reply that your coming here and doing this has been essentially a blessing of the Lord. I was about to go through something I probably shouldn't have done. And you kind of intervened for me, he was glad you did that. But give them the preparation. But there's also something down about verse 30 that she says about David. Notice that when you're reading through this? What does she say about David? She's talking to him. He's going to be the ruler over Israel. Did you notice that? Here's Abigail, how the word's getting out. How these people know this. But Saul's already told him. Jonathan's told him that. Saul's told him that. Now here's Abigail saying that. That you're going to be the ruler over Israel. So she gives all these presents to David, appeases him, he turns and goes back, does not go to fight with Nabal. But Abigail's not finished yet. Okay? She's got to tell Nabal about what she's done. After all, he's turned back, right? Well, see, when she gets back there, he's in this festival feasting mood, and what else is wrong with him? He drank a lot of wine, and he's what? He just dropped, okay? He just dropped. So she picks not to tell him then. She waits till the next day when the wine's gone out of him, and she tells him what she's done. Okay? She's gone and taken care of David's people up there. Without the Nabal. Turned to a stone. I mean, I don't know if he had a heart attack, had a stroke, what it was. But he didn't die, not until 10 days later. But he just was there. Like a stone, just sat. Died 10 days later when the Lord struck him dead. Or his way he treated David. Now, Nabal out of the way. This beautiful, intelligent lady there available. What does David do? Sends a delegation of men to Abigail. He tells her what? Call me my wife. Okay. And she does very rapidly, seems like. Already there. David has another wife he's married to. And he had a wife originally who was who? Michal, who was Saul's daughter. But David's been gone all this time. So Saul is thinking, giving her to another man. I don't know if it's for spite against David or just because she was there or what. He doesn't have Michal with him anymore. He will later on. But he doesn't have Michal with him now. He has these two wives. So David's got two wives out in the desert with him. He's 600 men. And apparently their families, as we'll see here in a minute. So that finishes up chapter 25. The story of David, Nabal, Abigail, Nabal's death, and him marrying Abigail. They got thoughts about that. We'll move to the next chapter. All right, 26. David's going to run into Saul again. We already know he's run into him one time in the cave when he did not take his life. He cut a piece of his robe off. So what he could have done, but he didn't. So now he's going to run into him again. Second time it's happened. And again, these people of Ziph are involved in it. And David's been back in their territory because that's kind of in the area where Carmel was this time. And so they come back again and tell Saul where David is, like they did before. And Saul takes 3,000 men, like that's the same number he used last time, if I remember right, and he's going down to try to find David and attack him again. So Saul is camped. And like you would think a king might be, the men are camped all around. Where's Saul? In the middle of it, which is very logical. You're going to protect the king. You put him in the middle of the camp, and you can surround him. So here's the men all around Saul, and they're sleeping. Saul is there, and Abner, who's man of his army, is there with Saul. So David asks for a volunteer, and Abishai volunteers to go with him. What are they going to do? They'll sneak in through all these people up there where Saul is. Right through the middle of the camp of Saul and go in there. And when they do, they of course could have easily killed him over there. They get there and what does the young man with David tell him when they found Saul there? Let me do what? Let me drive my spear through him. And what did he say? It won't take a second lick. He said, I'll give him the first lick, I'll drive it through him, and that's all it'll take. It will not take a second try. I'll drive my spear through it. But David had it. Can't do it. Can't do it. And here's why. Not permitted to stretch out our hand against the Lord's anointed. Same exact thing David said last time. Saul is a special person. Even though Saul didn't reject it, he's still the king. David has respect for that. And you will not kill it. Now, it's also said that they are all sleeping really, really well because why? The Lord put a sleep on them. Okay, so they were not just like they snuck into camp, but when they saw them, the Lord had them sleeping in this deep sleep. They went into the middle of the camp and found Saul there. So, he doesn't want to kill him. Will not kill him. Not let Abishai kill him. So what do they take with them? They're going to leave and go back. But they want some evidence they've been there. Take David's spear or sword. I think it's a spear. I think it's a spear. And the jug of water sitting there beside his head. Okay. They go back across the valley to the mountain where they were, away from them, where they can't get to them. David calls out. Who's he call out to? Not to Saul to start with, but to picks on Abner. What's Abner's job? Take care of the king, okay? By the way, Abner, look what I've got in my hand here, okay? I got the spear and the jug of water was sitting right beside Saul's head. Abner, what have you been doing? We're doing your job, okay? So when Saul hears the voice, he recognizes it as the voice of David. So he talks to him then as he wakes him up. And what Saul said him last time when David called out to him, made this little speech to him. Not this time, but said him last time. What's Saul's reaction when he cut his piece of the robe off? Wept. Right, wept. I won't come back and fight you again. Go in peace. I'm wrong. I should have done that. You haven't done anything to justify this. That's all the stuff David said last time. I mean, Saul said last time to David. And yet, here he is again. Okay, 3,000 men come down to try to find and kill David. What's he do this time? Same thing. Okay. Just about the same thing. Again, he confesses that I was wrong. I should have treated you this way. You haven't done anything to deserve it. And David says, okay, here's your spear. Here's a jug of water. Send what you got, man, over here. You have it. Take it back with you. I don't even want that. I'm not going to take that from you. Come get it and have it back. That's the second time that David easily could have killed Saul and refused to do it because of who Saul was. Whoops. As far as we know, Saul did not make any other attempts on David's life. This is the last time in the scriptures that they mentioned about it. Now Saul came back after David. Also, as far as the scriptures are concerned, the last time Saul and David will meet to talk. We're in chapter 26. I've been a couple of chapters over here, so Saul's going to be dead. So as far as I know, this is the last encounter that Saul and David have with one another. It's here in chapter 26. Okay. Alright, if you look at Psalm 63, Psalm 63 is written, as best we can tell, somewhere in this time frame. The slide here says, in our curriculum, we stick it in here between this chapter and the next one where David goes into Philistia. Don't know exactly the chronology of it, when it should fit in here, but seems to fit well in this time frame if you look at it. So, very, very much like the other Psalms we've seen with David. Let's look at it right here. A couple of points I want to make about it as we go through it. Psalm 63. O God, you are my God. Early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you. Where? In a dry and thirsty land. Right where David's been. Down this wilderness, dry, desolate area down there. Where there is no water. I look for you in the sanctuary to see your power and your glory, because your loving kindness is better than life. My lips shall praise you. Thus I will bless you while I live. I will lift up your hand, my hands in your name. My soul shall be satisfied with the marrow and fatness. My mouth shall praise you with joyful lips. The thing about where he is in this next thing. David's down there, fighting during the daytime, or whatever he's out doing. Look what he thinks about God. I remember you on my bed. I meditate on you in the night watches. Maybe going to bed, thinking about the Lord. You've been my help. In the shadow of your wings, I will rejoice. My soul follows closely behind you. Your right hand upholds me. For those who seek my life to destroy it shall go down to the lower parts of the earth. They shall fall by the sword. They shall be a portion for jackals. But the king shall rejoice in God. Everyone who swears by him shall glory. But the mouth of those who speak lies should be stopped. So, two or three phrases in there that kind of points to where David might be, a dry, dark, thirsty land, laying down at night, thinking about God. Okay, we got one more chapter I'm looking at. We have three tonight. Short piece here. David obviously doesn't trust Saul that he's not going to bother him anymore. Saul may just, this confession of David, I should have not bothered you, I should have let you alone, all this stuff. But just like last time, David didn't go back home because Saul said, I'm not going to bother you anymore. So David again leaves and goes over to the Philistine territory. Now we said last time because Saul is not going to go into the Philistine territory looking for David. He's not going to go there and crank up a battle with the Philistines called David. So David goes back there this time, back over to Gath, to Achish, the king, and takes the 600 men with him. And if you notice there, I don't know which verse it is, but David said it takes the household and David's two wives are with him there. It's like they just move over there, literally, into the land of the Philistines, to Gath, there in Gath. So I'm not going to come get him there. So after he's been there a little while, he talks to Achish and says, "Yeah, I'm here with you. I'm helping you out. I'll run some battles for you. We need a place to live. But, you know, don't give me your city here, Gath. That's your capital city. But give me one of the country cities, one of the country towns out there." So he gets in the city of Ziklag to go live in the city. And he stays over there for about almost a year and a half. Philistine territory. So. Now, we'll look at the map in a minute and see where that is. While he's there, he runs these raids. He's out on raiding parties or raiding adventures or missions out there. And he goes against the Girgashites, the Gerzites, and the Amalekites. Amalekites had been destroyed already back in 1 Samuel 15, remember? But they weren't. We go in, and when David would go there to fight with these countries or with these nations, he'd wipe them out. He'd have no evidence. He'd have nobody alive. Nobody could tell who came, did it, where he was, where he had been. He'd wipe them out and take all the spoil back with it. Now, Achish, king of the Philistines, thinks David's doing what? Helping him out, right? And we'll get a little sad on the screen here in a minute. He thinks he's helping him out, but go out doing his battles for him. What really should have happened to these nations already that David's fighting against? They should have been wiped out when? Back when they first came into land, right? To wipe them out then, they wouldn't have to mess with them. They didn't do it. Of course, Saul should have gotten the Amalekites again in chapter 15. They didn't do that. But David's going out there really. He's getting rid of these people. It's going to be a problem to him and his territory, his kingdom, when it comes to that. Now, he's not being totally honest with the king, Achish here. But here's Ziklag. We're back up now in the part of where we've been before. Here's En-Gedi over here. That's Maon and Carmel. Here's Ziklag, right on the edge of the Philistine and the Israelite territory. The mountain range is here. So we're out of the foothills of the mountains. So they start sloping back off there. That is Ziklag would be. So David runs these raids, if you will, all down to the south. Gets these nations down there. And then when he comes back and talks to Achish, he's pretty vague about where he's been and what he's done. Giving the whole story seems like there. About who he's raiding against. Again, like I said, there's no witnesses to talk about it. That's kind of what David spent his time doing in the Philistine territory. So it's all won't bother him. Run these raids out, send the people out of the country that he needs gone for his kingdom later on. And remember the phrase we looked at a couple of chapters back before David went on his missions? He would do what? Inquire of God, inquire of the Lord, inquire of the Lord, inquire of the Lord. Let's say that. If you flip through several pages here, you don't see that anywhere. If it picks back up, we'll see a whole lot more later on. David inquired the Lord over and over and over and over. A little gap here. So we don't know now whether David is doing these missions under God's direction, or if he's just out there doing it. There's no indication that he's talked to the Lord about it. Yes, sir. She can't tell. He was about to do something he really shouldn't have done. And he gives her credit for stopping him from doing that. Yeah, it does there. It's almost like there's as far as what's recorded, a gap in David's connection with the Lord here. Don't know that, but if it doesn't say all through there, he inquired the Lord several times through here. But, we already talked about this. And the little phrase here, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's kind of what the king of Philistines is thinking about. And David's his enemy is out fighting against the Philistines and against the Israelites, he thinks. Okay, against his own people. Therefore, he must be our friend. So, okay. We've got a couple of applications for us here. We'll go back again, the same point we made before. And I'm going to spend a lot of time on this. We'll talk about it a whole lot, I guess, this Sunday. About our attitude toward civil government. And David's attitude toward Saul and what he would not do to Saul because he was God's appointed king. Okay. There's a lesson there for us, and we've talked about that some already. How we should treat the rulers, how we should pray for the rulers. They're in position of authority, Romans 13, because who put them there? Because God put them there. Even though they're evil, I think about the New Testament time. This is Paul writing in Romans here. What kind of condition is Paul living in the New Testament time? Roman oppression, persecution of the Jewish leaders, Nero in control in Rome, very difficult times. We don't see Paul talking bad about the civil authorities anywhere. So we need to be careful what we say, how we handle that. All of us. Anybody else on that point? Comments? Anybody? Okay, we mentioned this earlier too. The thing about Abigail. A wise wife. Okay. If it had not been for her, what would David have done to Nabal and his people up there? He was going to do the same thing to them. He had been doing these raiding parties later in the next chapter, or two chapters later. He'd go up there and he'd clean house. David's come back, well, the men reported to him, strap on your swords, we're going to battle. He would go up there and clean things up. Instead, she brought the wisdom into it. She said, talk about how bad her husband is, what kind of approach he is, what kind of person he is, and so she intervened. Not only to keep him alive for the time, but also to stop David from doing something he shouldn't have done. Okay. So sometimes. Yeah, because when Nabal speaks there, what do you say? Who is David? Who is this prince in Israel? He starts asking these questions now. Freddie's got a point. Maybe he didn't know who he was. But his servants knew who he was and what he had done for them. Yeah. So they knew. Yeah. And we don't know what Nabal knew about David. We don't know that. But he did ask the questions like, well, who is David? Who's this prince of Israel you're talking about here? They may not have known about it, but his servant sure did. And they could have intervened there and helped him out there. And Abigail was chosen for wisdom, and she came in and did this. as much as she tried. It's almost like Nabal was beyond saving. Because what he had done, the Lord struck him dead because of it. First figure 3 talks about how a wife needs to act to her husband with wisdom. But think about that. Both ways. Your wife in here, help your husband out. Show the wisdom. Help us poor guys out when we act dumb, okay? We need it. For us guys, be glad you got a wise wife that can help you out. All right. David and vengeance. Think about that a minute with us. What are we inclined to do when somebody does us wrong? Right back. I'll take care of it. I'll get it. That's what David did in this case here. Right. He's gonna go back, take vengeance on them. That's the way they treated me. Won't give us out, repay us this thing here. Take vengeance, strike back, hit them hard. Deuteronomy 23:35, vengeance is mine, I will repay. And the slide points out here, that's not a New Testament passage, that goes way, way back. Even back, way back before David. God's going to avenge those. So even though we're inclined sometimes to avenge ourselves, the wisdom of Abigail come in here and stop David from doing something he shouldn't have done. How are we to treat those that treat us bad? Don't we overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. We all know that verse. Okay, that's it. Comments? Thoughts from anybody about these three chapters? Yeah. I would point out, it's on the slide, I didn't mention it, that Nabal's name means what? Worthless. Okay? What his name means. As you said, that's what he is. He lives up to his name here there. And then the other point Albert made, if you didn't hear him, was that she didn't try to hide it from Nabal. Now, she didn't tell him the night when he was drunk. Wasn't done any good. But the next morning she did tell him. All right, she had done this to hide his back or anything. But she had gone out there and taken care of the situation. And she went and told him about it. But he was back sober the next morning, so she could understand. The question it begs, I don't see an answer to here, is why was Abigail married to him to start with? Okay. He was that kind of person, why she married him to start with. I don't know. Customs were much different back then. Maybe she was given to him as a wife. Or her parents. I don't know. But nothing said about why she was with him to start with. The kind of guy he was, not a good place to be, obviously. And what Randall's pointing out over here is, it's plenty of scriptures that tell us to be careful of who we associate with, who we buddy with. Okay, next time we get into, I think it's just one chapter, it's 1 Samuel chapter 28, but we also, for the first time, get into 1 Chronicles. So look at the parallel passage. You got 1 Chronicles 12, first part of it, and then 1 Samuel 28. We have a short lesson Sunday. We'll go back to this, these slides on the passages as in the different periods. Talk about that a little bit. There's some time filler there. But pretty short lesson Sunday morning. Okay? I think it's time for Bill. Thank you.